From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1997 in Manhattan. Rick Guidotti was enjoying what many thought was a kind of a dream job, a high-end fashion photographer. He was traveling the world, Milan, Paris, London, New York. For a photographer, it was the fast-paced kind of work that allowed him to take in the biggest cities. But then, Guidotti was walking down the street, noticed a young girl, maybe 12 years old, waiting for a bus. Her hair was white, her skin was pale. She had albinism, and he thought she was simply beautiful. Before Rick could pull out a camera, the bus was gone, and in that moment, his career as a high-end fashion photographer was essentially over. He looked up albinism, and what he found was that people with the condition were treated like a disease of themselves, something to fear, something to hold at arm's length. From medical textbooks to newspaper articles, Guidotti found photographs that turned the condition into something akin to a movie, you know, like The Da Vinci Code or The Matrix or Powder. And he decided his lens would now focus on the beauty of genetic differences. His career change has also taken him around the world, but this time to parts of Africa, the Middle East, and elsewhere. He meets children who've been told they're freaks, they're ugly, they're not worthy of love, and his photography proves how wrong that is. Rick's in Rochester to help open an exhibit of his work at the George Eastman House, a free exhibit opening to the public tomorrow. He's got an event tonight. He's working in conjunction with the Golisano Foundation, which happens to be celebrating 30 years themselves of great work in our community. Let me welcome to Connections Rick Guidotti. It is great to have you here, Rick.
Well, pleasure. Thank you so much for having us.
Ann Costello is the director of the Golisano Foundation. 30 years, and am I allowed to say, we just talked about the number. Can I say the number? You're coming up on $250 million in philanthropy.
Well, that includes Tom's personal as well as the foundation. But yes, Evan, $250 million or $250 million.
Yeah, it's really, really remarkable work. Thank you for being here, Ann.
Thank you, Rick.
I want to go back to that moment, 1997. You know, first of all, when you were in high-end fashion photography, I've heard you say that as much as that can be exciting, fun work, it's a very narrow definition of beauty, isn't it?
Absolutely. Very, very narrow. In fact, I was always told who was beautiful. I was told who the model of the moment was, and that was really amazing to work with her. And then the next season, she would change, that face would change, and you'd have to change your idea of beauty again, and different hair color, different person, different
usually
model.
Still size zero.
So usually still size zero. That's kind of getting a little large zero, but it was kind of intense. But it was the thing that was just so frustrating, though, in that wonderful, you know, industry, is that I saw beauty not just on covers of magazines. I saw beauty everywhere, and that's when I spotted this amazing kid waiting for the bus.
All right, so tell us about that story then. She got on the bus before you could get a picture?
I would never just take a picture, but before I can grab her and say, I have to take your photograph, you're amazing. She got on the bus and took off. So before I can grab her the first time, the bus disappeared, and this beautiful girl who I realized had never been included in the beauty standard. She was so beautiful, but I just realized I never met a model with this condition before. So when I ran to the local bookstore, it was a Barnes & Noble in Union Square in New York, I grabbed all these medical textbooks, think I'm going to find gorgeous photographs of this beautiful kid and her friends that have the same condition. And that's not what I found in those books. I found these horrible images of disease, of sadness, of sickness, the images of complete and utter despair. And there are mostly images of kids up against walls in doctor's offices, usually naked, with black bars across their eyes, sometimes in their underwear. And then just so many, and then all those horrible, like in cancer clinics, and everyone looking so sad. So it was so sad, so horrible to have albinism. I was like, wait a minute. This is not what I just saw. This gorgeous kid with her hair blowing in the wind was just amazing.
And so you set out, did it really change you almost completely as a photographer in that moment? Did you know that the work you'd been doing in high-end fashion photography was essentially over?
No, because my work in high-end and fashion has never changed.
Okay.
I'm exactly the same photographer that I was in the early days. For me, it's always been about beauty. I didn't become a fashion photographer so I can date models. I was really about the beauty aesthetic, and I just was so passionately and excited about beauty, and then capturing that and then presenting it back and collaborating with great teams that developed this creative this image. And I love that. Nothing's changed. I'm exactly the same photographer. It's actually more exciting now because I'm able to be a little bit more honest and truthful to myself and follow my own heart and my own artistic drive than following somebody else's standard and someone else's rules and regulations, you know, that would monitor the beauty standard.
Sure. And so, in 1997, you decide you want to do this. By 1998, if I have this correct, you got a spread in Life magazine.
Sure, cover story in Life magazine.
All right. So what was the process? I mean, because sure, that autonomy of deciding, I'm not just going to let the world tell me what beauty is, and I've got to photograph this small, narrow set. But then you have to find a way to create relationships with people. What did you do then?
Well, there's an organization called NOAA, which is the National Organization for Albinism and Hypopigmentation. It's a support group for people living with this condition and their families. It's called NOAA, and I saw there was a number. I think this is fantastic. I called them immediately, saying, "Hey, I'm a fashion photographer. Let's show the world the beauty of albinism. This is going to be incredible." And they really said to get lost. That was their first reaction, was to go away. And you know, I don't give up quite so easy. I'm a New Yorker. And I really believed in this. I was like, I didn't understand. And I kept calling and trying to figure out what's going on. Why are you telling me to go away? And they made it very clear to me about their fear of exploitation early on. That every time a magazine article came out about a kid with albinism, it was a story about a victim. It was always sensational. It was always exploitative. It was always negative. And I said, well, you know, I agree with you. I can't find one positive image. Let's partner. Let's create a non-traditional partnership. A fashion photographer, a genetic support group will work together and will create a beautiful photographic essay celebrating the beauty of albinism. And that's when they agreed. When we presented it that way, they completely were behind this project.
And how do you end up in Life magazine then?
Well, I wasn't really sure where this was going. I thought it was just going to be a regular, like a spread on these gorgeous kids and young adults. And in walks the very first girl that I'm about to photograph. Her name is Christine, and she's stunning. She walks in. She's about 5'9", long, long white hair. She's so beautiful. But she walks in with her shoulders hunched, her head down, no eye contact, one word answers. This kid had zero self-esteem. She had been tortured and teased her whole life in school. School was hell for this kid because of her difference. She was made fun of. She was abused, bullied every day because of this condition. And I thought, this kid is so vulnerable. How am I going to photograph her? But just the day before, I had photographed Cindy Crawford on the same set in my studio. And I thought, you know, out of respect for this beautiful kid, I'm going to photograph her like I would any supermodel, any model, any gorgeous kid that would walk in that studio. So the fan went on, the music went on, and I grabbed a mirror that was next to the set. And I held it up to her really close because she had a visual impairment. I held it up really close to her, and I said, Christina, look at yourself. You're magnificent. And she saw it. And this kid exploded with a smile that literally lit up New York City. And that just pulled me right into this whole product. And she's continuing to be a teacher. This kid needed to change the way she saw herself. Her community needed to change the way they saw her. So she, at that very moment, and that explosion, that smile, that transformation in this beautiful, you know, with the kid with full of self-esteem, and she developed the philosophy that drives my photography, which is change how you see how you change.
This is a really remarkable story, and we are working toward the local connection. We're going to get there in a minute because Rick's been working with, I think, 20 people in our area, part of an exhibit that opens tomorrow at the Eastman House. It's a free exhibit. He is. You can find his work online and do it right now. I threw up a link on our Twitter page earlier, at Evan Dawson on Twitter, but if you want to find it yourself, it's positiveexposure.org. Go right to the gallery, and as we're having this conversation, maybe you're listening at work. Don't do this if you're driving, but if you're having this conversation at work, and if you're at work, check out some of the galleries right now. And Ann Costello, do you recall the first time hearing about Rick's work? I mean, this is exactly the kinds of missions we talk about in Move to Include in the Golisano Foundation, isn't it?
It sure is, and I absolutely remember the first time I heard about Rick's work and met Rick. It was a year ago, July. I was in New Jersey at the Special Olympics National Games, and Rick was one of the speakers at the AADMD conference. And I knew immediately that somehow I needed to get him and his positive exposure exhibit to Rochester. We became fast friends pretty quickly, and the 30th anniversary was right around the corner, and I couldn't think of a better person or exhibit than this to help us celebrate.
All right, well, we'll get to that in a second, but let's keep working through the timeline because this Life spread comes out, and all of a sudden you start getting calls from around the world, don't
sure.
you?
Sure.
So what happened?
I started getting, I was still doing my fashion work and traveling, working in Europe and traveling in London and just traveling around the world. But I was always trying to step back from those trips and organize a community-based project, working with people with albinism in that community. So I went to traveled in the South Pacific and where, you know, in Fiji, I've met people with albinism. I started an albinism support group in New Zealand and kind of revitalized one that was in Australia. Spent a lot of time in African countries doing my fashion shoots as well, but then I would stick around and we started the first Albinism Society of Kenya. So just continued working this way. So it was really very, very exciting to have the ability to continue doing my fashion work, but also be able to do the work that was so important to me, seeing beauty not just again on those covers of magazines, but elsewhere and everywhere.
And there's a couple of things that then, according to some of the work, and you can find Rick's TED Talks online. You really ought to check them out because, again, the show and tell is so much fun to see. But there's a couple of things that really struck me. First of all, as you traveled, I'm sure you know, when you from the moment you met that or you saw that young girl to now, you've learned so much.
I mean,
it's a huge learning process. There's no way you could have known that, for example, Tanzania and East Africa, kids could get killed for having albinism. And you described which doctors, which unfortunately, you know, you want to think is sort of part of an old fable, but still happening? What happened?
It's happening currently. In fact, the attacks were as recent as about 3 weeks ago.
All right, so what you're describing is there are witch doctors there, and you say the witch doctors in Tanzania will say, bring me the bones of an albino and I'll do what?
I'll make a potion that will make you rich. So these kids are being attacked on their way home from school, pulled out of their beds at night from their homes, or attacked at market, and they're attacked with machetes. These are children and adults being attacked. And it's a nightmare. But it's just a few bad witch doctors that are saying this. And so we're really kind of trying to really empower the community to protect these gorgeous kids and adults with albinism by through education, through talking about this superstition and exactly that as superstition. We just created a documentary called On Beauty, and one of our main characters is Jane Waithera, who has albinism in East Africa, and she started Positive Exposure Kenya, and just was part of the Young African Leadership Award, the Nelson Mandela Young African Leadership Award, and she got to meet with President Obama, and she spoke to him about the atrocities also. So we have this, they are happening, we're all addressing, we're trying to empower the communities to really protect these kids and these young adults and these adults from these horrible atrocities.
You said 70 kids were killed over a two-year span alone.
Yes.
Unbelievable. And some of the kids are now taken away from their families essentially to protect them, right?
Sure.
So a child is born with albinism and the parents are aware of this threat, of this ridiculous idea that the bones of someone with albinism could be turned into a potion to make you rich, which is just I can't believe in 2015 we're having this conversation, but they're taken away to protect them? Where do they go?
They're sent to schools, orphanages, anywhere they can send them, they can get a wire a gate around, and then they're patrolled by armed security men. Unfortunately, because of what's going on in all the problems that are happening there, they're not really always that safe either. And I've visited and traveled to several of these kind of almost refugee camps where kids are sent to be protected, it's appalling. It's some of the living conditions. It's five kids to a bed and toilets that don't work and it's a nightmare.
Talking to Rick Guidotti, positiveexposure.org, and his remarkable work around the world, turning his lens as a photographer on people with genetic differences, albinism at first, and we're going to be talking a little bit more broadly in just a moment. But I've loved not only seeing the photography, but hearing some of the really touching personal stories. Siri, whose parents thought she was cursed, a child who was cursed, a child born with albinism, named Siri, and the parents don't know what it is. They think the child's cursed. Obviously, albinism, you've got
No pigmentation in your hair, skin, or eyes. It's recessive, so both parents actually carry the gene, but quite often in many African countries, the mother will be blamed.
And they thought maybe the cure was more sun.
More sun.
You know, because, you know, you're so fair, when in reality, that only makes things more difficult.
Right.
And the images of Siri. But I mean, beautiful. There's no question, Siri. You light up thinking of it, but you also think about what kind of life do you have when your parents think that you're cursed just because of the way you're born. So that's what you get at when you start reading the stories, seeing the images. You know, and I just, I can't believe we're still talking about it in this way in 2015, but it makes you realize if we're myopic, if we're just going around Western New York community, it's a big world, and there, boy, there are kids who need support, who need to know that they're not freaks or monsters or all the things they tell Rick when they meet him. What do you think?
Well, not only children, but children and adults. Recently, as you know, Evan, we've talked about it before, Tom gave a very generous contribution to Special Olympics International to help improve health status, health outcomes for people with intellectual disabilities. Much like albinism, people with intellectual disabilities all over the world are often shunned, are isolated, are hidden by families, and do not receive the care they need. So it's albinism and all kinds of intellectual and developmental disabilities. And through Rick's work, of course, the public gets to see images of people. And, you know, we've always said education and awareness helps the cause. But through Move to Include and other initiatives, we're trying to get people to act, to change their behavior, to help in different ways.
Go to positiveexposure.org right now to check out the galleries that help illustrate what we're talking about this hour. And Rick also likes to mention the way they're portrayed, not just in medical journals, but we mentioned it off the top, the movies, Princess Bride, Powder, Matrix, Da Vinci Code. Typically the standard is a villain, someone to be feared, right, Rick?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Da Vinci Code's a perfect example.
Absolutely, perfect example. And they go, and the list goes on and on and on. They're the four very popular ones, but these continue to happen. Me, myself, and Irene was the albino, and so just these horrible things continue. They just continue to spread this negative message constantly.
Yeah, and so trying to counter that, and so. Let's talk about what is going on now. Now, first of all, I do want to make sure you know a couple of things about what WXXI is involved with. Tom Dooley and the wonderful folks who help produce Arts in Focus, which I hope you're watching every week, Friday nights at 8:30. You can also watch it Saturday night on WXXI-TV. And Arts in Focus is going to feature Rick Guidotti and his work tomorrow night, so you can watch that. Now, Ann Costello, let's walk through the next few days here. What's going on tonight that you want people to know about?
Well, tonight is the premiere opening of the Positive Exposure exhibit featuring 20 individuals from the greater Rochester area that Rick took pictures of in August. He spent 2 days here at the George Eastman House for the exhibit, and they're absolutely gorgeous and fantastic. I really can't wait for the community to see the exhibit. So tonight at 7 p.m., Rick is talking. It's open to the public. It's free of charge at the Dryden Theater. So I hope anyone listening, if you haven't registered, that you'd go online to register. We have there are several seats in the Dryden Theater, but of course we are limited somewhat, so that's why we're requesting registration.
I would say to our audience, register and do it now and go if you can. It's really inspiring stuff.
Absolutely.
So that's tonight, 7 o'clock.
That's tonight, 7 o'clock. Then tomorrow, the exhibit opens to the public at the George Eastman House. It will run through October 18th. And again, the exhibit, to the Positive Exposure exhibit, is free of charge to anyone who comes. So we're encouraging families, friends, the general public, agencies that support people with intellectual disabilities to come with groups, busloads, anybody who really should see how positive exposure is presenting these people.
Okay. And I also want to mention that Move to Include is a partnership between WXXI and the Golisano Foundation. It's designed to promote inclusion for people with intellectual and physical differences through programming, special events. WXXI and the Golisano Foundation are looking to build a more inclusive community by inspiring and motivating people to embrace different abilities and include all people in every aspect of community life, which is, again, of all the different things Move to Include has done, this feels like it is perfectly in the sweet spot. So we urge you to check that out. Now, you were here in August for a couple of days, right?
I was indeed.
Okay. Can you tell us about how that kind of, Anne kind of told us a little bit how it came together, but what it was like when you were doing the work just, I was going to say last month, 2 months ago now. Wow.
No, already.
Yeah.
It was pretty, really exciting to meet some of these incredible kids from the community and seeing them becoming empowered. Not in kids and adults as well. It was just of all, I always say kids, but people of all ages.
Sure.
But they were, it was so empowering and so such a great moment. It's a great environment to be in. And it was not only empowering for the individual being photographed themselves, but it was really exciting to see how empowered the families were becoming. And then these images are then going to be used to go back into their own community through exhibitions. Schools will visit the exhibition and see these great kids and see how amazing they are and be empowered themselves. So again, change how you see how you change. Early on in with the Life magazine piece and all that, just I got a lot of awards for that piece. And one of the particular award was the Art of Reporting Award from the Genetic Alliance, which is a coalition of all the genetic support groups. So very quickly after getting that award, I transitioned to not just photographing people with albinism, but individuals living with physical, behavioral, genetic, and cognitive differences. Really looking at the beauty in celebrating that the beauty in human diversity, seeing that beauty, presenting that beauty, back and really using the arts to challenge stigma and to challenge and change perceptions and attitudes toward anyone living with difference. So many of these gorgeous individuals that showed up, our ambassadors, we call them, came to the Eastman House to be photographed. It was incredible. There was so much fun, so much love in that room, not just for the individual themselves, but their families and the people actually at that work at the Eastman House. Everyone was involved. It was just so exciting and it was electric. Mm-hmm. And the images almost vibrate. That's just, when you'll see them, there was so much laughter, so much love, so much eye contact and empowerment and transformations and then pride. It just exudes pride. It's just incredible.
Now, we have to say kids and adults because, number one, we are talking about all people.
All, correct. Absolutely.
But also, you've been doing this long enough now that a lot of the kids you've shot over the years are adults now.
Exactly.
Has it been interesting for you to watch how, you know, their lives have progressed? Do you stay in touch with them?
Sure.
Yeah. Oh,
absolutely, yeah, for sure. We stay in touch from the first kids that we started photographing to the adults. Once you become part of the Positive Exposure family, you become part of this movement. And it's building a human movement and globally to change the way people see difference, to help individuals embrace diversity. Working with this community here, everyone that came were involved in the photo shoots at the Eastman House. They were family already. They had great relationships with the Golisano Foundation. They had great relationships in their communities, working in city halls and working in schools. And it was amazing. And to see everybody beaming with that sense of pride.
Do you get a sense now, when you started in 98 doing this kind of photography, you mentioned Christina, for example, mm-hmm. you know, really your first one. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she did not come in with self-confidence.
No.
And that changed. And many of the kids and adults you have photographed over the years do not come in with self-confidence because of the experiences they've had in their lives.
Sure.
But is it starting to shift where more of the kids and adults you're meeting with genetic differences are a little more confident, more excited? As in, are you measuring any sort of hard-to-measure societal shift?
Sure.
Or is that getting better?
It's getting better. It's shifting slightly, but slowly. There's a lot of resistance, unfortunately. That's why we create these photographic exhibitions and have them on public display worldwide. Because we really need to continue encouraging the community to embrace diversity, to embrace difference. And when that starts to happen, then individuals become more and more empowered with a more positive sense of who they are. And therefore, the self-esteem levels rise a little bit, but so often they're very quickly pushed down again because the resistance is still there. So we're trying as hard as we can, but there's so many wonderful programs out there through a school program that we have called the Pearls Project, going into schools worldwide, giving not only visibility and photographic exhibitions of all of our ambassadors, but also giving them a voice, whether it's kind of an online blogging platform where individuals get to talk about their lives, they get to talk about their strengths, and they don't just talk about their differences, but they talk about computer games and best friends and school and just all kinds of amazing things that we all talk about, creating, again, another opportunities to not to see that disease or diagnosis, but to see around that to what we share, which is humanity, of course.
And
to that point, I can think of several situations or incidents at the photo shoot about that very point about self-esteem. One mom shared with me that she had never seen her son smile, a natural smile, the way he was smiling at Rick. Another parents said they had never seen their son take to a stranger like he took to Rick. And actually, he went through the halls of the Eastman alone with Rick to find the best place to be photographed. And another young woman who spoke on the vignettes that XXI will be showing said, and I'll never forget this, that Rick was so much fun to work with, but here's the point, and I know he loves me. Not I love him, but I know he loves me. Rick has a way of connecting with the individual on a very personal level. He sees the person, not the disability, and he brings out the best. And when I think of that young man and a mom saying, I've never seen him smile, a natural smile, you know it's something special.
Yeah, we were talking before the hour began. Sometimes when there are various charitable causes, charitable events, etc., someone who is ostensibly connected will sort of fly in at the last second and do kind of a hit and run, an event, wave, whether it's a celebrity, sometimes a photographer, etc. When you see Rick speak, he speaks at length about complex genetic conditions, and you know instantly this is not just a guy who shows up with the camera for 20 minutes and he's out of there and he doesn't care. And so, Rick, I really admire that about you because it is clear. You know, we got to take a break here. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more broadly about some of the work that you do. Can we talk about the Chromosome 18 Registry and Research Society? We can talk about things like Marfan syndrome, all these things that, you know, rarely get covered unless there's a big kind of a celebrity or public case. And Rick starts to be able to talk about very fluently. It is impressive, and it should be inspiring to all of us. You can find it online, positiveexposure.org. Rick's in Rochester, and we'll talk more about that next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, Hochstein School of Music is turning 95 years old, and this weekend there is a celebration in music. We've got a live performance next hour with a preview of what's coming up. Some music from the 1920s. Along with the story of a kind of surprising discovery of sheet music, nearly 100 years old, that sparked this whole thing. It's all coming up next hour.
This is WXXI AM Rochester, WRUR FM and HD Rochester, WEOS FM and HD Geneva, and WXXI FM HD2 Rochester.
There's one statistic about veterans that gets thrown around a lot. 22 veteran suicides a day.
We as Americans think that number, 22, I can hang my hat on it because it's a hard number, but it's not. It's just a big plus or minus.
Veteran suicides, the story behind the numbers later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That'll be this afternoon at 4 on your NPR news station.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Sometimes when I get so locked into a conversation, I'm an impolite host, and I forget to tell the audience that if you want to join the conversation, I'm on Twitter at Evan Dawson. I see a few comments and questions coming in. I'll get to those in a minute. You can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. If you want to weigh in, Rick Guidotti is here. He is a photographer and the lens behind positiveexposure.org, which you can check out right now. See the galleries of the work he's done, photographs of kids and adults with genetic differences around the world, and finding and celebrating beauty. If you missed the beginning part of the conversation, Rick was in high-end fashion photography and saw a girl with albinism, thought she was beautiful, and realized when he did his own research that so often, whether it's in medical journals or just newspapers or magazines, when people with genetic differences are photographed, they are depicted in ways that make them seem like something to fear, something to hold at a distance. And Rick thought, no, it's time to examine the beauty and to celebrate the beauty of all people. And that's what his work does. It's really, really great stuff. He focused often on albinism, and still does, but has broadened the spectrum. And here's an example. I saw you talking about someone that you photographed with Marfan syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And I only know what Marfan syndrome is because I think it was about a year ago, right before the NBA draft, there was a 7-foot center from Baylor, and he was projected to be a top 12 pick in the draft, a lottery pick, was going to make millions of dollars, and about 2 weeks before the draft was diagnosed with Marfan syndrome. Mm. His career was over, and it was actually a really beautiful moment. Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, called him up on stage. The NBA office drafted him, and he has become sort of a spokesperson for the condition. But immediately people around the country who were watching the draft said, I don't know what Marfan syndrome is.
Absolutely.
And 7 feet tall, and he was
Mr. Austin. I just met him, photographed him, and his mom.
Oh, so they're amazing. Here, I should have asked you. You're probably tight, right?
He's an amazing kid.
Okay.
And he's just started a foundation. And I travel a lot to the family conferences, family genetic conferences, and I meet new families, and I present positive exposure and give people in the audience the opportunity to, instead of mourning a diagnosis, to celebrate that person. Person, that individual that's in their family, and to have an opportunity for the rest of the world after I photograph them to see the beauty in that individual, so the way that someone loves them sees that beauty. I met Mr. Austin with his mom at the Marfan conference. I traveled to a lot of these family conferences worldwide. Mostly in the summer months, the conferences, because kids are home from school, but there are several that go on the next couple of months as well. I'll be at neurofibromatosis, I'll be at epidermolysis bullosa conference. I will also be at there's just several other conferences that I'll be attending to. We're creating something with at Children's Hospital in Los Angeles as well currently. So there's so I get to meet these great kids, and I get to see these great families, and I get to bring med students with me and throw them in daycare so they get to play with some of these kids and not see these kids in crisis, but see these kids being kids.
In just a second, I'm going to go to you, Walter, in Penfield, waiting on the phone. But just as a follow-up point, the Austin story, Marfan syndrome, it reminded me that there are many conditions. There might be there might be 20,000 people in the world with it. It might be 1 in 20,000 born with a condition. It might be 1 in 100,000. But there's many that we don't hear of until, you know, we're older in life, and then we hear about it. And the easy thing to do is sort of peel back a little. And Rick makes us just not do that. And the Austin story is a good example.
Absolutely.
You know, this really good-looking 7-foot guy who could have been in the NBA with a toothpaste commercial smile, and you know, so a diagnosis of, well, this person has Marfan syndrome, or whatever it is, we shouldn't recoil, I guess. And that's you keep reminding us of that.
Well, Marfan syndrome itself is a connective tissue disorder. So as an individual living with this condition, you're at risk of having an aortic dissection, or which can be life-threatening. They say that Abraham Lincoln had Marfan syndrome. They say that, and a confirmed diagnosis of Jonathan Larson, who wrote Rent, the Broadway show Rent, when it was opening off Broadway, he went to the hospital with complaining of heart pains, and they told him, well, it's just anxiety. You have a show opening off Broadway tomorrow. They sent him home, and he died with an aortic dissection. So it's really about raising awareness. So many of these conditions, so I travel to these family conditions to also raise awareness, to bring, so as I go and I photograph all these great family members and ambassadors there at each conference, we then gift the photographs to the organizations themselves to use it for public awareness materials, exhibitions, create opportunities to really understand what that condition is, a little bit more about it, but presenting it not as a disease or diagnosis, but making sure we see first and foremost the humanity.
PositiveExposure.org. Exhibit opens tomorrow at the George Eastman House. It's free. 20 local subjects, great local people, and you can see the exhibit there. Also, it's going to feature some of his previous work, and tonight, 7 p.m. at the Dryden, free event, but if you can register beforehand, do so. And Ann Costello, how can they register beforehand?
They can go right online at the Golisano Foundation website, George Eastman website, or Google, or, you know, look for it online.
Okay,
but
so
website.
Let them know you're
website.
Coming tonight. And I got to ask Rick about going to the Eastman House. I mean, he is a photographer. This is a little bit of a photographic town. So we'll get to that in a second. But let me grab Walter in Penfield. Go ahead, Walter.
Good afternoon. I have had the opportunity of traveling extensively in the Republic of Mali and West Africa. And of course, albinos often are to be shunned, but what has happened since 1977, a popular singer by the name of Salif Keita has tended, through wide publicity worldwide, reduced the negative attitudes toward albinism in the Republic of Mali, particularly in the urban communities, where communications are much better, of course, than it is in the rural areas. I just wondered whether highlighting people with difficulties, as we would call it, who become successful, can tend to attenuate or moderate the attitudes toward people who have such difficulties.
Walter, it's a great question. Thanks for the phone call. Go ahead, Rick.
Sure. I've actually had the great pleasure to work with Salif, and I've spent a lot of time in Bamako. We had an albinism society that we created there, and have had several fundraisers and lots of public awareness programs where we had families come from miles around just to get any information to save the life of their kids, because they didn't have enough information to protect their babies from the sun, sun cream or sun protective clothing and skin cream. It's just not existent or prohibitively expensive in Africa. So we created a lot of opportunities to start that discussion. And yes, someone like Salif, who's in the spotlight, he's considered the golden voice of Africa. He would be really great for us to partner with, and we have, to kind of raise awareness. But it's really not just the voices of our celebrities and our superstars that's helpful. I think it's also really important that we see the celebrity in all of our individuals living with difference, all their bravery and all their how they've stood in the face in the face of resistance and in the face of difficulties, and have kind of been empowered through that experience, and then share that experience as well. So we're looking at heroes and celebrity also at the ground level, and not just the superstars themselves.
And what do you think of that?
I was going to say the same thing that Rick. It's very helpful to use the celebrity. They're a face that people know, and we can get the word out about causes. But certainly our Move to Include initiative and much of the work of the Golisano Foundation is to support people and families who are not celebrities, who often do not have the voice, who are not empowered, and don't have access to the services that a celebrity may have.
Tricia writes to the program and just wants to know, she says, I'm looking at his work online and trying to hold back tears, but wants to know, when you travel around the world, how difficult are the political situations that you might have to deal with in different countries?
We have so much support in all the different countries that we go to. They have a lot of, I just don't show up with the camera. We're usually working with local hospitals or community services or NGOs on ground. So a lot of that information, and since we're there, we're doing this great fun program and a great environment, it's not as scary. So we're always thrown in, and have been in some difficult situations, but at the for what we're doing in our community, we've been 100% safe all the time, with a lot of support from the community, and they make that kind of keep us all out of danger and keep us all kind of protected and safe.
Rick is a photographer, and think about what he is telling us this hour when it comes to the work that he's done, especially kids with genetic differences. When you don't have to be a child with a genetic difference, you can be sort of genetically typical. My wife is a portrait photographer. She does mostly high school senior portrait photography in our area. And she works with beautiful students, right? And some of them are plagued with self-doubt when they meet her. And that's normal. I mean, who among us doesn't have something that we wish we could change?
Sure.
You know, I've got a little bit of a unibrow that I'm not a big fan of. On certain days, male pattern baldness isn't always my favorite thing. I'm usually fine with it. But we all have things, right?
Sure.
You know, and imagine then you're a child growing up with albinism or other things, and you have to endure schoolyard taunts, or just endure, you know, sort of why me, and what does this mean about me? And parents might not understand, and kids might not understand. And, you know, and that is the kind of thing that can break hearts. But, you know, I guess where I'm going with this is, we all have our own insecurities, right?
We all do.
And I wish the world would somehow let these kids know, in the way Rick is letting them know, that, you know, you're not the only one with insecurities. We all do too, and it's okay to feel that way, but you should never feel, you know, unfortunately, like some kids say, well, I'm a freak or whatever term they use.
That's right. Well, again, that's why the Golisano Foundation has promoted the End the R Word, education and awareness about how hurtful our words can be. That's why we have the wonderful Project Search employment program to show that people with disabilities are very good employees, some of the best that companies can hire. We just have to keep at it. It's the world often is not a nice or friendly place, and that's what these initiatives are all about.
Rick, they tell you after they see the photo, because it's one thing to do the actual shoot, right? Because you got to get them to kind of come out of a shell or see themselves as the beautiful people they are, as you've said, Christina being the example, and then you see them during the shoot. But then, what is it like when they see the images?
Well, they've already been elevated to that. So they've already been empowered through the shoot. So the photograph at that point is like, yeah, I look amazing. It's so cool. It's so great. But something really exciting in this particular exhibition that we've created with the local Osana Foundation is as you approach each image is face mounted on glass. So as you're approaching each image at the exhibition at the George Eastman House, you will see you'll see these gorgeous, vibrant, this spirit, this energy coming from the photograph. But you'll also notice, because of this highly reflective surface that we've created this exhibition, you also see your own reflection. And in that reflection will be reflected back through the eyes of these gorgeous individuals, your best qualities. So this really, you're absolutely hit the nail on the head. This is actually, we all have those moments where we feel insecure, we're not feeling the best that we are that particular day. And this is about all of us. It's giving all of us the opportunity, not just our ambassadors that were photographed, they're the teachers now, because they're giving you permission to love your own reflection. And that's what this exhibition is all about. And I believe what the Goal Sauna Foundation is all about too. It's about making sure that we see the best qualities in all of us.
Melissa says, I am listening online, and give Rick a hug for me. My family in particular thinks this is such an important message. Thank you, Melissa. And afterwards, I will give Rick a hug for you. I promise. We got a few minutes left now, and I just want to remind you that, again, tonight, 7 o'clock at the Dryden, if you want to see Rick present, it's free. And then starting tomorrow, the exhibit is free at the George Eastman House that he was just describing. What is it like for you to be part of now the Eastman House? I mean, you're a photographer. It's sort of a big name in photography.
Well, you know, as an artist, as a visual artist, it was like being the center of the universe. I mean, it was incredible to not only be there, but to be so welcomed and to bring these gorgeous ambassadors there to be photographed at the center of the universe. It was pretty amazing. It was an incredible experience. The people the support system and network around the George Eastman House is remarkable. And they were just, and there was so much love in the Eastman House, and there still is now with this great honor to have this exhibition there. And there's just so much love and support, and it's incredible. It was a great, 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 great experience.
Photographers from around the world sort of call it their mecca, and that's not really overstating, is it?
Center of the universe.
Center of the
bigger than mecca.
bigger than mecca.
Center of the photographic universe. We've talked about Rick's work with people with albinism, and among other things. But what I want to just stress between now and the end of the hour is what happens next. I'm curious to know about what his work, where his work is going to take him. What do you think we all can do? And tell me a little bit about Chromosome 18 Registry and Research Society.
Sure. Well, I received the award from the Genetic Alliance, which is a coalition of all the genetic support groups, for the Life magazine piece. And they said, you know, we're looking at these gorgeous photographs of kids with albinism worldwide, but there's a universal message here. It's not just about albinism. It's about all differences. And would you be interested in work with some of our other support groups? And they told me about there's this Chromosome 18 Registry conference coming up. Would you like to go? It's in Texas. And I was like, sure, but what the heck is a Chromosome 18 anomaly? I'm a fashion photographer. I had no idea. I ran back to those medical textbooks. And the photographs that I saw were stillborn images, images of kids with cleft palates, feeding tubes, trachs, kids with mobility issues. They were terrifying images. And I was frightened, because I'm thinking, albinism was so easy. This is really scary. But I went to the conference. I walked down to the auditorium where kids were being entertained by kids and young adults being entertained by a clown making balloon animals on stage. And I walked in, and I had these images burned in my head from those medical textbooks. But I walked in, and I was instantly surrounded by kids screaming with laughter. They were kids. They were kids, and they were adults, and there were people having fun and laughing. There were people there with cleft palates and feeding tubes and trachs and mobility issues, but they were people. And like, where were those images? Where was the sound of the giggles in those photographs? Those images showed disease diagnosis. They did not show humanity. And the first thing that I saw when I walked into that auditorium was humanity. First thing I heard, it was everywhere. And that's when we started photographing. And I realized at that moment that my whole life as a fashion photographer trained me to do this, to make sure that I'm able to use my talents to see beauty, to trust instincts and see beauty and then present that back. Meeting people like Sarah, who's part of this documentary called On Beauty. Sarah was born with Sturge-Weber syndrome, where she has a birthmark bilaterally across her face. She developed a technique so she doesn't have to see people staring at her. She looks down. I'm like, no, on the table, head up, let's go. You've got to celebrate that difference. You must celebrate. And then you watch the empowerment, not just on Sarah, but her family and then her community. We're all told when we see somebody walking down the street that's different, to look away, because staring, it's rude. But I've been told by so many of my friends that looking away sometimes is even more painful than the staring. Mm-hmm. So positive exposure creates the opportunity to steady the glance, steady the heads, the gaze long enough of the public. Just gently hold it in place till you see beauty in the eyes of the person you're looking at, seeing around that difference to what we all share, which absolutely is humanity.
That's such an important observation on human etiquette, because I think that I've probably been one of those people myself where, you know, you don't want to stare, you look away, you pretend they're not even there, and then they feel even more isolated. Sure. And I hadn't thought about that. Maybe what we do is just smile.
Absolutely.
Right. Just smile.
Yeah,
yes.
My boy.
You know, Evan, one of the areas of priority for the Golisano Foundation is not only working with clinicians and docs who have been in practice for some time, but training and exposing the next generation of professional, both medical, healthcare, as well as human service, to be comfortable, to have experience with people with, in our case, intellectual disabilities. Mm-hmm. And this work that Rick is doing now to change or at least improve how individuals with various conditions are exposed in medical textbooks or displayed is very important, and we're very interested in this work.
One of our listeners says, Evan, on senior portrait photography, some photographers who do high school senior portraits have done a true beauty promotion where they have people nominate someone who they feel has true beauty. Most likely they're dealing with some sort of illness or other issue. They give them a free photo shoot. They celebrate who they are, and just wants to know if Rick has any thoughts about that.
That's a great idea. I think we're building this movement, and it's for all of us to use our own talents and our own vision to challenge stigma and to celebrate human diversity however we can. The lecture tomorrow or this evening is really to inspire the audiences to utilize their own talents, whatever that might be: music, writing, dance, photography, painting, sculpture, teaching, whatever it happens to be. Is to use your own talents to address these issues, to celebrate human diversity.
I was going to ask you why it is you think that so often when you went to those medical textbooks or just the articles you read about people with albinism or Marfan syndrome or all these different things, they were presented in these really unfortunately dark and sort of scary ways. But my instinct tells me, I mean, I'm reminded of a conversation I had yesterday where we looked at the history of Jewish-Catholic relations in our community. And in the 1850s, the rhetoric in this country about immigrant Catholics was the same kind of thing that we're hearing about Syrian refugees or immigrants today, which is they don't share our values, they won't assimilate, I don't want my kids going to school with their kids. And it's kind of the same as it ever was. Mm. And I think where we're evolving, though, is realizing that, you know, we are different, but we are all sort of global brothers and sisters. And that's so I think probably the dark photography that you saw is just sort of a symptom of when we see something that is different, it's easy to fear it without knowing it. What do you think?
Well, many of the images that I saw, the traditional medical type photograph of an individual standing up against the wall with the black bar across their eyes, the black bar wasn't placed there to make them look even more upset and even sadder than the, or more despairing. But the black bar was there actually to protect the individual, to protect that individual's privacy. So, but so we're evolving and changing now. Right now, I have families chasing me down the street saying, "Please let me sign anything. Use my baby's photograph. Don't ever let me see another. I'll use it for anything."
Yeah.
So, and this is happening all the time. So we're evolving. We're changing because we've started the dialogue. The photographic exhibition at the George Eastman House tomorrow, that's there, that opens tomorrow, it's really there to for all of us to start the dialogue. We can't have just that special talk once one day a year, or let's talk about disability on Disability Awareness Day or week, or it has to be every single moment. We have to be comfortable talking about diversity if we really want to be able to embrace it and understand the true meaning of inclusion. We start this dialogue, and that the dialogue needs to begin from the second a kid starts school to the moment that same individual retires from the workforce or the workplace. We need to create opportunities to have this conversation in cross all kinds of disciplines in every kind of environment.
Well, here's what you need to know. Rick Guidotti in Rochester now tonight, 7 o'clock at the Dryden Theater, his free presentation. Talking about his work and his inspirational work along these lines. Then tomorrow, the free exhibit at the George Eastman House, and you can see it there, positiveexposure.org, to check out more of his work, more of the galleries. And they're celebrating 30 years for the Golisano Foundation. I know Ann Costello feels like this is just the perfect way to do it. Thank you, Ann.
Thank
it's
you.
Always
welcome.
Lovely to have you here. Rick Guidotti, inspirational stuff. We'll see you at the George Eastman, the Dryden tonight. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And I just want to mention that Move to Include, once again, we're proud to make it a partnership between WXXI and the Golisano Foundation, designed to promote inclusion for people with intellectual and physical disabilities. Proud to do that. Short break, more connections next.